Welcome to IPC's podcast, Global Electronics, The Art of the Possible. I'm John Mitchell, podcast host and president and CEO of IPC, the global association that helps manufacturers build electronics better through proven standards, certification and training, advocacy, and industry intelligence. Digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world. We need to start talking about the policy, sustainability, network, and workforce adoptions integral to developing the factory of the future. We want to take a broad look at some of the opportunities and challenges of creating and running the factory of the future and talk one-on-one with the industry leaders and pioneers in manufacturing and management. Join us in exploring the factory of the future. We're here with Steve Puttles, CEO of Zentek Manufacturing. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be with you, John.
So let's jump right in. We're going to ask you a few questions here. So much of the discussion about this new decade is about how digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution. When you hear this, what does this mean to you?
I look at the factories today, and I look at especially with the advent of the IPC's CFX standard, and we now can have machines talking to each other without the need for expensive middleware, which is especially important to companies, you know, the size of Zentek, which are, you know, under $100 million, who can't afford to spend hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars on tools to have the data generated that we used to, you know, we used to go around with clipboards to pick up. What I see is machines talking to each other, people being able to use data instead of spending time extracting data, and really with the advent of AI, the artificial intelligence, and the advent of more in way of robotics, I see you know, a lot of the technology being able to replace some of the hiring problems we're having because the economy is so good. So there's really an ability to do more with less, and to continue to grow without the restrictions that,
sure,
you know, historical restrictions.
Yeah, so it's like we're utilizing technology to streamline the processes. We're taking out complicated pieces that were the glue, if you will, and allowing, as you said, instead of people trying to gather the data, now they can go figure out how to use the data. So that's interesting. So it's not just about the whiz-bang factor, it's actually efficiency.
It's all about efficiencies. You know, our business is very focused on military. About 80% of our business and our revenues are in mil aero. We've gone through a series of acquisitions, and all of their business is primarily mil aero. So we're staying focused on a high reliability. And when you're a small company and you're splintered up into four or five factories, and each factory is really a small company or small business, now you're looking at how do I do more, provide the customers with more without having to actually, you know, hire more people just to go and get things that we need to run our business and improve on our business.
Got it. Great. Appreciate that. So what do you feel are the critical elements, standards, technologies that will enable or define the factory of the future?
Well, you know, I've already given a shameless plug to the IPC's
CFX. Yeah, sure.
But it's true. I mean, if you take a look and you look at the evolution of standards with respect to equipment, with respect to CAD systems, you know, the IPC was really a leader when we were talking about ODB++. And now with the CFX standard, where machines are really talking to each other, we're really flattening out the ability of small companies to compete into the field with those larger businesses that we're up against. But we're looking at, you know, we're looking at using dissimilar systems. We're looking at a new ERP system now. We're looking at an MES, manufacturing execution software. We're looking at a materials management system and traceability. And there's all these companies that provided solutions, and the problem was how they're going to talk to each other.
Right.
And I think, you know, as we move on, I don't think any of them want to think that there's a real open architecture, but it really is. And now we're allowed to pick modules from dissimilar systems, and ultimately those will be able to speak to each other without us having to having to write a lot of code to do that, or to buy, you know, what's historically known as middleware.
Yeah, you know, I saw a factory of the future a few years back, but it was all made by the same company, and it's very easy to, or I shouldn't say easy, but it's easier for if you provide every single piece of the machinery across that line, Well, obviously they're all going to talk together, but people don't buy that way. You don't go to a factory and say, okay, I'm just going to go to company X and we're going to fill up the entire line of their products.
One of our facilities, we're using a pick and place platform, and I don't want to mention the manufacturer because what I'm going to say is not the most flattering thing, but the machine is, let's say, 12 or 13 years old, and they've said to us, you really need to invest in this new software, you know, that we're now selling with our new machines. And through some of the factory, some of the CFX tools, we would not have to do that in the future. We'd be able to have that machine talk to the rest of our systems. We'd be able to have our front end, our NPI tools talk to that machine, do the programming, write process sheets, everything. And it's going to become, I think, a lot easier to get involved in the technology aspects of the business.
So having common standards that are also easily implementable allows you not only to, so you can buy a new machine for where you might need a new machine, right, but you don't have to replace your old machine. You might be able to implement this structure on that so they can talk together.
Yeah.
So and if the more the industry utilizes the standards, that helps you bring about the factory of the future to, as you said, I like the idea, you know, so it's not just, hey, I'm a multi-billion-dollar organization. These multi-million-dollar organizations now can focus on this.
The other thing is the companies that don't get on board with the open standard with CFX, when we look to buy new pieces of equipment and it comes down to two manufacturers, whatever the utility of that equipment is, the ones that are more proactive on providing interoperability those are going to be our solutions. You know, you go back 20 years ago, I had discussions with two pick-and-place manufacturers over why I wouldn't replace what I was using with either one of their platforms. And I said, because I already have $1 million worth of feeders and carts that load the machines up, I'm not going to be putting one machine in where I have 60 of something else and start to go out and buy new feeders. And now we're getting to the same place now with automation and with standards and with machines talking to each other
It's like the whole factory is an ecosystem. Things don't just stand on their own. Every little change affects everything else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very good. All right. So what's your thoughts on how governments can help industry be more successful, or what role government should play?
Well, it's interesting because I'm going to take a right turn here and talk about, you know, specifically the U.S. government.
Okay.
Because I did say that a lot of our business is defense related. Mm-hmm. We have a problem that a lot of commodities that we purchase on behalf of our customers, there's not enough capacity in the U.S. under ITAR regulations and ITAR rules that allow us to allow the entire market to satisfy the schedules of all of the prime contractors with the DoD budget increases. You know, we're looking at an $800 billion plus budget in DoD. We're looking at it again next year, at least that amount, and hopefully another 4 years after that, but I'll leave that to somebody else. But if you take a look at just printed circuit board fabrication, there's not enough fabrication capacity today, even with all the stuff that all the big guys are adding.
Under the ITAR qualification.
Under the ITAR qualifications in the U.S. in order to satisfy all the schedules that are going to come out for all the electronics that are being purchased across the country. Wow. So you're entering into a defense budget where some of the primes on certain programs are not going to be on time. And it's not going to be on time because of the government regulations regarding ITAR. There's ITAR facilities that are recognized outside of the U.S., but when, you know, just because somebody, whether it's an Israeli company or a Canadian company or a Mexican company, and somebody comes in and says, we're ITAR, the first thing the prime says to us as a subcontractor, as an EMS company, is, well, we're not going to give you approval to use that because
they're outside
the U.S. So, they, you know, it's educating them that we could use them, but we need to, I think we need to, as a country, look at the restrictions, maybe increase the allowable stuff purchased outside of the U.S. to the Five Eyes, you know, or other countries as defined, or other specific regions in other countries. And we really need to take a good look at that. And that's where the government, you know, I remember the previous, you know, administration talked about removing some of the restrictions under ITAR. They never did. I get the feeling that if anything, the current administration would tighten
it
up. So, you know, I think people like the DoD agent, you know, Crane, and some of the efforts there, I think would be really helpful. It doesn't only affect that. It affects connectors. It affects filters. It affects cable harnesses. And if there's just a shortage of
as this growth trend has happened, there's not really the capacity that qualifies today to even meet the need that's expected to come.
That's Steve's belief. I don't have any data that tells me that I'm right or wrong, but I look at certain, and I won't mention manufacturers because I'm not looking to it, but cause some of them are in very, very involved with the IPC. But one board shop that's probably, you know, one of the world's largest that has a bunch of ITAR facilities in the U.S., one of their facilities, we just got notice that their lead time for that shop for new orders is beyond 26 weeks for a printed circuit board.
So how are you going to meet your schedules?
No way. You're doing quotes today for a product for a prime that is either direct for the government or for another prime, and we're quoting, you know, lead times of 30 and 40 weeks.
Wow.
And they're looking at us like, you know, do you guys know what you're doing? And I say, it's not us doing it, it's you doing it. So we get into those discussions.
Interesting. All right. So we live in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world, and the future of supply chain points to fewer silos and more cross-collaboration. How can companies integrate themselves better within this kind of network?
So I've thought about an example that would really, you know, be typical, I think, of what's going to happen. We bought a new tool to do our material quotations, our supply chain quotation. And we load up all of our distributors, all of our manufacturers into that, and we've created APIs between the quote tool and we created the interface for the API between the quote tool and the database from that distributor or manufacturer.
Okay.
So we now load up a bill of materials with the manufacturer part numbers, and within 3 minutes,
it's off and running.
85% of our bill, 90% of our bill comes back populated. Now, how some of that is book pricing that we really don't want to use, but for low dollar items, who cares? You know, if it's all the C items that make up, 5% of the cost of the bill of materials, but it's 150 items out of 200,
we don't
really care.
Yeah.
You know, and the customers don't care. They'd rather get the quote fast. So now we take whatever is not covered under those APIs, things like fabricated items and, you know, things that are specific to a vendor or a supplier that is not part of that structure. Mm-hmm. But more and more, I think, through it's almost like the same discussion we're having about CFX, the APIs for all of these products to talk to all of these other products, whether you're talking to a DFM, design for manufacturability product, which then talks to your ERP, which then talks to your supplier, you want the same kind of interfaces. Now we do have to look at the ODB++. We look at the data exchange. We look at maybe there's some open architecture data exchange that's even simpler out there. But ODB++ works fine. And by making everybody want to talk to each other electronically, again, we're improving efficiency. We're reducing the need to hire more people when we want to grow. Between our quote groups and our supply chain group in one of our locations, we have almost 20 people. That's a tremendous, because we do a lot of small, because it's military, we do a lot of small volume. And large bills of materials, hundreds of items. So there's just a lot of volume going through that all have to be touched. The more automation we can put in, the more efficient we get, obviously.
So these systems that you're describing here, do you have compatible systems down throughout your supply chain so that they tie in directly there? Or
all of the major distributors, and whether it's Arrow and Avnet and Future and Highland and TTI and the ones that I don't mention are going to be upset that they weren't part of my discussion.
And everybody else.
But they're all providing the interface to allow it. Now, the ones that I think will be more successful will be the ones that specifically put into the database, a specific database for a specific customer. So where we have certain kind of price breaks for certain things that we do or certain customer contracts, the more that our database for them on the high dollar
and
item
use those.
And I think that we will see that continue to evolve. When I joined Zentech, which was about 9 months ago next week, it was, very little automation was being used. Everything was manual, spreadsheets. And, today we're doing, probably about 70% of our quoting through some of these tools that we've added, and I think it'll just get more and more as we go forward.
So the parse pit, I understand, as you're talking about those pieces, but what about, say, board shops? Are they tied into those same systems when they're providing that information to you?
The board shops are not today tied into the... And it's funny because most board suppliers are quoting based on panels and based on certain processes, and I think it would be easy to automate that as well. Okay. It just, the problem is on the higher dollar products that they're quoting, they have an engineer review some of the things that are very unique to certain products, and there's a lot more chance for missing something.
Got it.
With that automation today, that doesn't mean we can't get there. It needs to evolve.
Got it. Okay. Well, let me ask you this last question here then, as we conclude the interview. What do you think we as an industry should be talking about, but we're not?
I think there's a big problem with the small businesses. Mm-hmm. Let's call it the constituency that comes to our EMS management meetings for the IPC, and the companies that are under 50 million, under 25 million. And in order to comply with new standards and in order to comply with new government regulations, like some of the CMMC issues, there's just not enough money with a $10 million company to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars that they need to comply. And we're either going to have to figure out a way to handle and supplement the small businesses, or we're going to have to figure out what they're going to do next because they won't be able to participate in a lot of this. A lot of the cyber regulations, as an example, that we're seeing, you know, which are applicable to DoD business today, you know, I think at some point the other industries, you know, and it'll happen on a company by company basis, are going to say we want the same thing.
Yeah.
And you know.
Well, yes, I mean we're already hearing some of that discussion. You know, with the advent of AI, with people, you know, stealing IP and things like that. So you're talking about it's not just. I mean, DoD has, you know, had a laser focus on cybersecurity, but or security as a whole, you know, with things like ITAR and CMMC, et cetera. But with, as you think about every product line, I really think that's part of the future as well, that you'll start seeing we need to find ways to secure it, but it also has to be low cost, to your point. I mean, because you have, as you, different parts of the value chain are just not multi-billion dollar organizations that can throw $100,000 out of something without thinking about it.
And, you know, I've always been, spent my entire career with small to medium companies, you know, growing them in some cases up to a couple of hundred, few hundred million dollars, but, you know, it's through growth and brute force. And as I walk around the show floor, and I see the most beautiful brand new equipment at all these booths, and I think, you know, if I buy one of those, that's my CapEx budget for the year.
For the whole year,
and, you know, it's sometimes very frustrating because, you know, you sell yourself and differentiate yourself on being able to do things better than other peers, but then you start looking and saying, you know, but there's a big gap between what we do and what the multi-billion dollar, you know, companies can do. So it's
and maybe back to that government question, what could they do? Maybe there's a subsidy program that could allow the smaller companies to get some of those pieces of
equipment. Which goes against everything I believe in politically, but that's another story for another day.
There you go. Very good.
Okay.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for giving us a look into what the Factory of the Future holds and how we can prepare. I really appreciate your time and insights. You can find more information on the Factory of the Future and other electronics industry news at ipc.org.